Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, Jim Potts back on the air. Thank you so much for sharing your afternoon or your evening with me. I always appreciate that. Hey, today I want to first start out by sending a shout out. 14-year-old boy was arrested after allegedly planning mass shootings at two high school campuses. 14 years old, people, in Napa Valley Unified School District. Now, this is what I talk about when I say that, you know, don't be surprised where some of this comes from, another suburban place versus inner city. And the police said that the suspect, he wasn't identified because of his age, obviously. He told a fellow student at River Middle School that he was planning a shooting at their campus and also at Vintage High School as well. So this is what I've spoken about before, where these individuals do have a tendency to tell people things. The problem is normally people aren't listening and people don't do it, you know, in terms of turning them in. Well, in this particular case, he told a fellow student that he was going, what was happening. So he turned around and let the police know. And the fellow student said he was going to report this to his parents and the police. That's what he told the potential shooter. The potential shooter told him that that he would kill him if he did that. So the police, you know, later said that the victim was able to provide the police with evidence of the threats, and they in turn got search warrants for his residence in Napa Valley. This all happened this past Wednesday. So obviously they detained him, and on the same day apparently they kept him in custody because of the fact that he had actually made this threat on the victim. So, hey, listen, this is what I say out there when parents and peers and people know about something. You've got to say something. Telling the authorities after the fact that, in fact, this person was going to do something really doesn't help. We've got to get the message out there, the clear message to these students especially, that when they hear these kind of threats from their students or fellow classmates, they've got to report it. Don't think it's cool. Peer pressure, I get it sometimes, but the reality is we're being faced with these things on a real serious basis. So, shout out to the victim whose name is not known also because of the fact that he's also underage. But don't know if he's listening or not, but hey, good job and certainly appreciate it. Okay, today we're going to be talking about the first part of a two-part series I'm doing on surviving the threat. Then we're going to talk about the missing stats, you know, about carrying a concealed weapon. I had a speech that I gave earlier this week, and one of the participants asked me about statistics, about these, you know, concealed carry laws. And there's some myths out there, so I want to clear up some things with that and give some stats on the issues when somebody has carried a gun and some things that haven't happened. And then we're going to be talking about an historical piece. As I told you, as part of my regular programming, I want to do a historical piece. This week will be on an area called the Zebra Murders. Sounds interesting. And then, of course, now I'm going to be also giving a safety tip of the week at the end. Okay, let's get busy with these emails. My first email, Jim, I know you have talked about concealed weapons and have made your position very clear against civilians carrying concealed weapons. Did you hear about the woman who shot a guy trying to rob her? She had a concealed weapon permit, and it may have saved her life. What do you think now? Melissa, a gun-toting civilian, Dallas, Texas. Well, yes, I am aware of that. And for those of you who are not aware of that, it happened in Illinois, and this woman did, in fact, have a concealed carry license, and she actually fatally shot a man who had tried to rob her on the street early on this past Tuesday morning. She was a 25-year-old woman. She was standing at a corner in Chicago's Fernwood neighborhood around 6 a.m. waiting for a bus when an armed 19-year-old male approached her. When the suspect pulled out a gun, the woman produced her own weapon and shot him in the neck. The injured teen fled the scene and was discovered one block away by police. He wasn't identified at the time, but he was pronounced dead later on after he had been taken to the hospital. So, yes, I'm not going to say that there aren't situations out there, Melissa, where, in fact, having a concealed weapon does, in fact, help people. All right? That was a situation up close. That's one thing under those circumstances. But if you might recall in some of the other episodes that I've done, I've talked about the fact that if you're in a setting, because a lot of people like the idea of carrying a concealed weapon because if they're in a place where something's getting ready to happen, like at a nightclub or something like that, or at work, they want to pull it out under those circumstances and start shooting. And that's where I say there's a lot of liability associated with that as well. So to this lady who, in fact, did what she had to do, hey, shout out to you as well. And in that particular case, it did save her life. All right. Number two, Jim, your episode last week on the biodiversity regarding the wall can be impacted by border walls was amazing. Hopefully some of the politicians in Washington were listening. It's unsigned. So at any rate, well, I appreciate that. I thought the piece on biodiversity and the impact that the border wall is going to have, I thought that was important. Again, me taking a neutral position on a wall or no wall. I was really just trying to give some historical facts associated with border walls. Third one, Jim, did you see the mass overdose in Northern California from drugs being smuggled in from Mexico? Okay, look, let's understand something. Let's get something clarified right now. Yes, I did see that, but I want to clarify those drugs aren't just from the particular type of drug that we're going to be talking about in a second. It's not just from Mexico. It's also from China. And basically, for those of you who did not hear about that, there was a mass overdose in California, Northern California, that actually left one dead and 12 hospitalized. And the drug, it's a synthetic opioid, and it's from China to Mexico. And it's pronounced fentanyl, F-E-N-T-A-N-Y-L, fentanyl. And it's used, you know, as a filler for heroin and other street drugs. And even the police officers who responded, the first two who responded became ill and were treated and released. That just goes to show you how deadly that particular drug is. And I will tell you that the responding officers to that scene actually administered to some of the people there 6 doses of the opioid antidote. And the antidote is something called N-A-L-O-X-O-N-E. So I want to make sure you understand what it is so you get the correct spelling, et cetera. And also they tried to give CPR to these people. Now, so what's interesting is that the officers started carrying that same antidote last year. Now, think about that. It's such an issue that they actually carry the antidote with them. That gives you an idea how bad that particular opioid is. So it was fortunate that they had it with them because they said that it could have saved some lives. And according to the authorities, every indication was that the mass overdose incident was caused from the ingestion of some form of the fentanyl in combination with another substance. So that's what they're still working on. Now, as what's interesting is that the victims, they were between the ages of 19 to 30, all knew each other, the police said. So this is a whole group of people that showed up wherever they were to take this drug. Now, right now is what they're trying to do through their task force is try to determine where the drug came from. Now, I will tell you this, from my experience, that particular drug is 50 to 100 times more potent than morphine. Than morphine. 50 to 100 times more potent. I mean, I don't know what it is that people are putting these types of things into their bodies, but I will also tell you that this particular opioid is a pain medication, and they do consider it a narcotic. And what is it used for? To treat pain. It's used to treat pain well enough, you know, so that for people who cannot tolerate pain, this drug is used. So you know that you can't get it. Well, you don't know. But anyway, you can't get it without a prescription. So what they're doing is going to the black market. Now, for some of these individuals, I don't know. Maybe is what happened was that they may have had some kind of, you know, pain issue, and then they got hooked on this stuff. And now afterwards, they had to keep the treatment going, or they got hooked on it, and now they're addicted to it. But the misuse of this narcotic, it can cause addiction, it can cause overdoses or death, which is what, you know, happened in this particular case. So yes, I am definitely aware of that one. It's a dangerous drug out there. But let me just tell you once again, it's not just coming from Mexico, it's coming through China. Now, arguably, it's coming up through our southern border. I will grant you that. But let's not just say it's coming just from Mexico, because there's a lot of issues that people are having about this business with the wall and the drugs. So at any rate, look, if anybody wants to call in, I always like to give the number 818-602-4929. Or you can always, again, 818-602-4929 in case you have any comments or questions. And you can always email me at listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com. And if you want to get my blogs or email blast about upcoming topics, then you can text Potts Associates. That's POTTS Associates, ASSOCIATES. And you can text that to 22828 and enter your email address. And then at that time, you will get it. Okay? All right, that sounds good. All right, we're going to turn our attention to, let's see here. I think I'm getting a call. Let's see. Hi, you're live on the air with Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. Do you have a question or comment to share?
Yes. Hi, Jim. This is Jim from New Jersey.
Hey, Jim from New Jersey. I think you've called in before, right?
Oh, yeah, a couple of times. I've been listening every week since June.
Okay. Hey, well, I certainly appreciate that. How can I help you on this one, Jim?
Well, I heard more comments about the wall, and there's a lot of misconceptions about the building this wall, especially they say, oh, it's got to keep drugs out. Last week, when Trump visited the border, they showed him videos of elaborate tunnels that the drug dealers, the drug cartels, built underneath the existing walls. In fact, I saw on CNN today they discovered a new tunnel. So it's like, show me a 10-foot wall, and I'll show you a 12-foot ladder. I mean, not literally, but you build, you know, I mean, if they build a wall, they're going to find a way around it, either around it, over it, or under it. So to say that a wall is going to keep out the flow of drugs, it's ludicrous, because the bulk of the drugs don't come through people coming in illegally, walking across the border. Is usually smuggled in through actual ports of entry, or through these tunnels, or other means too.
Well, I will agree with you that people will find a way. But I'm sorry, keep going. Go ahead.
Another thing that has been brought up about so many illegals from crossing the border. The fact is, 40% of people that are here illegally did not come across that border. They're here, they overextended their visas, and they didn't renew the visas. And that's a fact. So to say that, you know, there's this great influx of people, it's ridiculous. That's basically what I wanted to say. Oh, so another thing, too. I know last week you mentioned about an officer was shot by or killed by an illegal immigrant. And now they use that as politicians tend to use that. As a reason to build a wall to keep people out. Well, by that logic, then, if you're going to blame all illegal immigrants for the crimes of a few, well, then let's blame all white American gun owners because a few of them decide to commit mass shootings. Right?
Well, let's just say, because you mentioned the word white, so I want to be clear that when we have mass shootings, that history has also shown us. Because I don't want to label any one particular ethnic group. Matter of fact, today I'm going to be talking about the zebra murders, which took place in Northern California. And those were by blacks that were specifically targeting whites. So I want to make it clear to the listeners that I understand where you're coming from, you know, in terms of what you're saying. But it's not just whites who have done mass shootings. I think last week or the week before I talked about the D.C. snipers, and they were black. The point
they were black. But that was a long time ago. But in recent years, they've all been white.
What's your definition of years ago in recent history? Because this was 15 years ago was 15 years ago, I guess.
And I would say within the last 5 to 10 years, is it? Haven't they all been white?
Okay.
I'm white myself, so don't get me wrong.
Right.
But
it's my job to make sure. Wait, Jim. But it's my job to make sure that the audience does understand. Because what happened when you say a mass shooting? Again, the mass shooting at the Pulse nightclub. He was of Muslim descent, and the mass shooting in San Bernardino, the same thing. My point is, your point's well taken, but I just want to make sure we clarify it's not just white shooting mass murders. That's all. You know, just
I know that, but you see what I'm saying by the logic. Then condemn all these gun owners. Then condemn all the gun owners that are legal residents. That because a handful of them who legally own guns commit mass murder.
Well, I don't disagree, and I'm not going to put the label it that way. But there are people out there that have guns, legal guns, that have done killings, mass murders, etc. I don't disagree with that as a concept, and I do somewhat agree with you that you can't pigeonhole all of this into any one ethnic group, legal, illegal, or whatever. And politicians, I'm just speaking in general now, so I'm not taking sides on the left or the right, but politicians in general, they'll all use whatever they can in order to push their own agendas. I mean, that does happen also. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. But unfortunately, right, a lot of gullible people in this country will listen to them.
Well, we are a nation of being gullible. There's no two ways about it. But I think some of that's also, hopefully some of that's changing in terms of everybody being so gullible, which is one of the things that I try to press with all of this domestic terrorism, conversations and discussions and some of the seminars and the teachings that I've done, is that we can't be that complacent. So hopefully we're going to become less gullible to understand that now we're in situations where this is real. This is no longer, something that's happening in another country, and we got to do things that we have to do.
Well, at least you present facts. That's the thing.
Right.
At least you present the facts. So there's no question about what you're saying is not fabricated for some political purpose or anything.
Oh, you're telling me it's not fake news?
Yeah, not fake news. Yeah, basically not fake news. Yeah, yeah. You present facts, 100% facts.
Yeah, I do try to back up.
I think white people listen.
I do try to back it up, Jim, because if I don't, we'll be getting the hate mail and everything, and people trying to correct me and the rest of that. So I do try to give the information based on research, and I document everything that I discuss on the air. I can tell you that, because again, I don't want somebody calling me on the carpet. From that perspective. But I certainly appreciate your calling in and giving a different perspective and an opinion about, the issue about this so-called wall. It is a very controversial issue in this country, and I don't know the solution to it. Wall, no wall, whatever the case may be. I think my understanding is that there are some places along the border that already has the walls, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah, there's plenty of wall. It just doesn't go all the way across.
Right, right. So, I don't know. Hopefully they'll get it all straightened out in Washington. And quite frankly, who we are, we're just the little people in all of this, and we can talk about it, air it out, discuss it, argue about it, and the rest of it. The reality is that they got to work it out in Washington one way or another, and I want to say we should all live with whatever decision gets made, but that's not going to happen, because I think all of this is just a very emotional type of issue. And when you have, emotional issues that involves people of one ethnic background or another ethnic background, I think you're always going to have some kind of controversy of unfairness, and that's the world we live in now.
But the world we live in, building a wall is like a 15th-century solution for a 21st-century problem.
Mm-hmm.
In this day and age, we have tremendous technology. The money should be spent on technology to control the border.
And what kind of technology would you suggest? I'm just curious.
I don't know what's ever out there. They must have ways of patrolling the border. They must have ways of sensors. They could, some kind of censoring
right,
sensors where they can detect when they're people within, 2 miles of the wall or the border, or whatever. There must be some way.
Right, but what happens?
The technology has to be there. I mean, this is 2019.
Right. Are you talking I think they were talking about drones or something. But Jim, let me ask you a question. Okay, so we put up these drones. I think that's technology what you'd be talking about. I'm just kind of curious. So the drones fly overhead. And then it points out, hey, there's a guy, there's a guy, there's a guy. Then what happens?
Well, the drones would be, I would assume they'd be monitored.
Right.
Point,
but by the time
there's a monitoring station where they send out the alarm. Okay, there's 20 guys trying to cross at X location.
Right.
And then the Border Patrol guys head in that direction, that's all.
Yeah, but suppose, I mean, how long does it take them to get there before they actually get across? Because my understanding is once they get across, they're here.
Hmm.
Right? I mean, look, you can set up a drone and the drone says, okay, we got 20 people, you know, 2 miles from the border. 2 miles, let's just say. And because you got to be careful. You're sending drones over into another country's airspace. If they're two miles from our border, logic dictates to me that means that the United States has drones, okay, on the Mexican side, and I don't know how that works internationally, quite frankly. But let's just say let's just say it's okay. Okay. So now we've got our drones up, and the Border Patrol people are 50 miles away, 20 miles away. And the drone sends out a signal, hey, we got 20 people 2 miles from the border. You think they're going to get there fast enough to be able to stop these people, just out of curiosity?
Well, they need to hire more Border Patrol officers, number one. But number two, as far as using a drone in Mexico's territory, we're already firing tear gas into another country, aren't we?
Yeah, and I can tell you something. From what I can see on the news about there in Mexico, they're trying to get rid of these people themselves. They're creating all kinds of... according to them, this is not me, I mean, this is on the news, is that the Mexican government has been trying to work with these people to try to get some of them out of there because it's creating all kinds of problems for them. So I understand what you're saying about that, that they're firing the tear gas at them, but tear gas is one thing. Having flights across, and they're also throwing rocks at our people. I mean, that's been on the news also. They got to do something to defend themselves. From that perspective, I'm just talking about self-preservation at that point. And at least tear gas doesn't, getting hit with a rock is one thing. Getting tear gas and making you tear up a little bit is a whole different ball game. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but again, I'm sure it's a handful of the people that are throwing the rocks.
And I would agree with that, too. But unfortunately, when they do it, from what I can see on the news, they're standing there and they got women and children next to them almost using them as their protection, from what I've seen on the news. But look, here we go again. You know, the reality is we could talk about this and give these opinions. And, I don't know if anybody in the government listens to my broadcast or not, but the realities are we're not going to be able to solve it. I mean, unless they solve it. Washington has got to solve the issue.
Absolutely.
And I think the rest of us have to sit back. And those are the people that we elected. And if, in fact, we disagree, and this is both sides, we disagree, then when the elections roll around, then we get them out of office and get them people that are going to be able to sit down and talk these things through with all of this nonsense that's going on back there. So we'll find out.
I agree.
2020 is right around the corner, Jimbo.
I agree.
All right, sir. Well, look, thank you very much for calling in. I appreciate you offering your opinion. You know, and again, I appreciate the fact that you've been a regular listener. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Take care. Bye.
Well, that was Jim. I do remember he has called in before, so I always appreciate people's opinions about these things. As I told you before, I try not to give, anything other than a neutral stance on it. So I respect all opinions and people calling in. I respect those opinions as well. So the listeners, you can formulate your own opinions about what's going on in Washington or what's not going on in Washington. If anybody has any comments they would like to make about the previous conversation, please feel free to call in. I appreciate it. Okay, let's see. We can go ahead and move on a little bit here. I want to talk about this business about what I consider surviving the threat. And surviving the threat, look, we got to talk about situational awareness. Situational awareness is what it's all about. Because I'm going to tell you, real self-defense and survival skills, they're not reactive. They're proactive. You got to understand that you have to prepare for these things. And again, we're living in different times. So because we're living in these times, we got to get out of our, natural comfort zones and start thinking about it in another way. Because situational awareness is about having more of a mindset than a skill. And it can be used by anyone, regardless of their physical ability or skill level. It's really about being aware of one's surroundings and identifying potential threats in dangerous situations. That's the deal. That's how you have to think. You got to have You got to have a 360-degree awareness zone around you. That's what's going to help you identify criminal behavior. Look at the lady the other night in on Wednesday in Illinois. What did she do? She was paying attention to what was going on around her. And she was able, as a result of that, she was able to save herself. Unfortunately for the suspect, he didn't survive the incident because she was ready. She was prepared. And that's what we're talking about. You've got to be aware of your surroundings and identify potential threats and dangerous situations. 360 degrees, just keep it in mind. You need, and I'm not talking about paranoia. I'm talking about awareness. I'm talking about the fact that when you're in a situation, and especially in an environment that's new to you, you haven't been there before, then, you know, you need to be paying even more attention. Now, I will tell you that the primary element of situational awareness is to first recognize, and this I want you to hear me clear on, is that bad things happen. There's no doubt about that. Bad things do happen. And in all honesty, we're not going to be able to stop 100% of the bad things that happen. But it's what we're trying to do is at least reduce down the percentages that may be more favorable to you, you know, or your family or your loved ones or even your coworkers. The fact that someone chooses to be ignorant or in denial of a threat does not make the danger any less. There are people out there that will put their heads in the sand regarding these types of things. And I'm telling you, you can't do that anymore. You know, it's highly unlikely that a person is going to survive an encounter if they're not prepared. Unawareness, ignorance, denial, complacency, apathy, and indifference are the roads that lead to demise. I'm sorry. That's really the bottom line these days. Now, look, awareness of one's surroundings also changes a person's mindset. They come to the understanding that they need to take responsibility for their own safety and security. You have to take the responsibility. You know, my brother's a doctor. He told me a long time ago that we as individuals have to take responsibility for our own health. And our, you know, you have to do it. You can't rely on somebody else. This is the same premise. You've got to take the responsibility, you know, especially for your family, you know, as well. So you've got to do it. Nobody's going to do it for you. The person who's situationally aware knows the reality of the world we live in. Every terrorist attack, mass shooting, or other criminal action cannot be stopped. But you can understand that law enforcement and government resources are finite. They're finite. They can't do it all and they can't be every place at once. That's what you have to understand. Even when you pick up that phone and call 911, and yes, I did work the streets, 911 call comes in, you get there as quickly as possible, but there's times when you're in the middle of another call, whatever it may be. And there just aren't enough people out there. All right. Police officers, they're trying their best. And by the way, speaking about police officers, already I think the number's up to 5 police officers getting killed this year. 3, I think, this week alone, including a young female rookie. And I know you guys get tired of me hearing about that, but because I have a law enforcement background, you know, these things are very personal to me from that standpoint. And again, the government resources are finite, and there just aren't enough people to be everywhere. And they can't be everywhere at once. Therefore, you need to look out for yourselves, your loved ones, and your neighbors. That's what you need to do. Now, look. We've all had what's going to be called a gut feeling or a hunch. You know that, a gut feeling or a hunch. Your subconscious notices the subtle signs of dangers that your conscious mind has difficulty communicating. That intuitive sense is your subconscious telling you that it saw something that's wrong. Part of being aware, people, means that you listen to those feelings and you act on them. You have to do it that way. It may save your life. Now, mindset can be learned. I want you to understand that also. Mindset can be learned. You know, I've talked about the fact that I trained some individuals that a client, because we've had a number of clients that have signed up for our Violence in the Workplace Preparedness Program that we offer. And some of the people I had trained, I had mentioned this on the show last year, that I had trained were actually at the Harvest Festival in Las Vegas. And they contacted me afterwards and turned around and told me that, in fact, that they had, their lives have been saved because of the training that we had done for them. They followed what we told them. What is that? That's mindset. That's being prepared. That's going over these things. It's easily learned and incorporated into your daily life. If you make it a part of your regular routine of just simply being aware of what's around you, then that's going to help you. And again, I'm not talking paranoia. And I'm going to tell you, you turn around and you make situational awareness or awareness of your surroundings a habit. If you turn it into a habit, and if you practice enough, you're going to find out soon enough, you become aware of what and who is around you without conscious thought. You won't have to think twice about it. It's just that simple. You'll be able to identify any potential threat immediately, and you'll be able to react to the threat accordingly. It's as simple as that. You'll be able to do it, trust me. But you have got to have the mindset at the beginning here to say, you know what, maybe some of this is true. And I've said before, don't think it can't happen to you. It can happen to you, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Now, look. Look, I want you to understand that when I give you this information, it's not acting from paranoia. It is acting from common sense at this point. I'm trying to help you be prepared. The only way for you to do that is listen to some of the tips that I'm telling you about and sit down with your families. And by the way, don't let these kids tell you, like your children, don't let them tell you that mom or dad, you know, this is a bunch of nonsense and bloop-de-blah, bloop-de-blah. Don't pay attention to that. I am telling you, force them to sit down. All right? Force them to sit down. And you go through some of these things with them. And don't take no for an answer. It is just that simple. Now, let's be real. You got to have a plan. Because I'm going to tell you something. When the bullets start flying, or the pipe bombs begin exploding, are you or your loved one going to become collateral damage? Or are you going to be a survivor? That's what it is. Oh, we're getting a call here. Let me see. Hi, you're live on the air with Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. Do you have a question or comment to share?
Oh, yeah. I was listening to your last caller, who was quite passionate and about the wall and all that. And I had my own point of view, kind of the other side of the argument, so to speak.
Okay. What would that be?
Well, first of all, I do want to agree with him about the tunnels and, you know, anything could be defeated. I had the pleasure of spending some time with an individual from the Israeli military, an engineer whose specialty was destroying the tunnels that, you know, were dug under the wall there. It was quite an educational experience. But you need to have something. Years ago, I worked for an individual who employed illegal aliens. And we were one day in the office, I don't know who it would have been, ICE or whoever, came in, busted people, took one individual, and shipped him back across the border. Well, his uncle also worked in the same environment. And I said, so what are you going to do now that, you know, your nephew's been shipped back across the border? I mean, we're going to be a man short, da-da-da-da-da-da. And he looked at me and he said, it's no problem. We go down there, meet him at the border, and we bring him back tomorrow. He'll be at work. So the fact is there's, you know, you got a revolving door type of situation. You take people, you arrest them or detain them, or whatever you do, ICE ships them back across the border, deports them. What's to keep them from coming back? I mean, we've got people here that have committed crimes that have been deported multiple times. And it's just, it's a joke. And I don't think these people have any respect for our laws, which, you know, don't allow for illegal immigration. They just come across to take advantage. And I find it rather irritating, to be sure. So there were a couple other points I wanted to make, but I mean, and if I'm not mistaken, and you're the lawyer, so you could probably tell me, but I think it's the first time you come across illegally, it's a misdemeanor, but every time after that is a felony.
Yeah.
So you have become a criminal in you know, the technical sense.
Well, the argument's been is that they're criminals when they come across the first time because they entered our country illegally. Whether it's a felony or a misdemeanor,
yeah.
It really doesn't matter. It's a crime. The only difference between a misdemeanor and a felony is that a misdemeanor, you get less than 1 year in jail. A felony, you get more than a year. So that's why they just classify a misdemeanor and a felony. But, yeah, that's not surprising about what you said with the uncle and the nephew. I mean, you listen to these stories. I mean, they're out there. There's no doubt about it, you know, and that's why some people consider it a very broken system on how they're getting, you know, these individuals across. Now, I will tell you that in my experience in law enforcement, I've also heard where people have come across the border at the checkpoints and they've had them hidden, wrapped around engines, wrapped around, in cars. Oh. That they have these different forms that people are still coming, and that's not going to have anything to do with a wall. So from that perspective, I understand what the first caller was saying. I'm sorry, go ahead. You were trying to say something?
Oh, no, and I do understand, I think anybody thinks the wall is going to be 100% foolproof is blowing smoke. I lost my train of thought. I'm terribly sorry.
Well, that's okay. He also mentioned about the fact about the mass shooting, so shootings by illegal immigrants / I know you call them aliens.
I would say this, that, we've got it. I don't know. I've seen the people on television that have lost loved ones from illegal aliens. And murders happen every day. Shootings happen every day. It's an unfortunate situation. However, what if you were able to control this, even 10% of it, save one life? These people, like Kate Steinle, should still be alive. Officer Singh should still be alive. That was by an illegal, those were by illegal aliens coming across our border illegally, that had no business here, and they'd come in multiple times. There needs to be some form of regulation for that. And I have no qualms with anybody coming here legally, going through the system. But if you go ahead and you say, look, there's a porous border, let everybody that wants to come across there illegally, we're going to look the other way, that's really not fair to all those people coming from other countries that are doing it legally. And some of them, like your previous caller said, they're overstaying their visas and they are here illegally. But they start off legally. They can be traced. These people flooding across, they can't be. And I will say this, and people that say, oh, walls are immoral or they don't work at all and everything else. I'll tell you what, I got an 8-foot fence around my house. I got a front door. I got, lockable windows. I got walls around my stuff. And the reason I have that is I want to pick and choose who can come into my house, who is going to be exposed to my family or my property. And anybody that comes in there illegally isn't welcome because they're up to no good. Well, they're going to take advantage of me in one form or another, and some forms may be pretty darn tragic and scary. Others might be petty theft, but that's not what I want. I want to secure the things I cherish and love, and I cherish and love my country, and I'd like to see that protected from people that take advantage of the system or cause other people harm, whether it be financial, physical, or what have you. And when they talk about the wall, it's not just a wall. And I think they leave that point out. It's a physical wall, sure, but there's boots on the ground. There's, as your other caller said, sure, there's going to be technology incorporated with that, sensors and so forth and so on. It's a multifaceted item. So,
one of the things he did mention was about the tunnel. So, with your 8-foot fence around your house, does anybody have a tunnel under it or got a 9-foot ladder climbed over it?
No, I don't think there's enough there to be encouraged to come for. But plus, they wouldn't receive a very good welcome to begin with. But,
he
got to start somewhere. And in that, I mean, there was the, was it HR 6061 approved in 2006 to cost, I think, $10 million or $10 billion for a wall. Where'd that money go? Where'd that wall go? I don't see it. Maybe they need to take that money, dig it up, and put that towards this. Anyway, that's, I'm not all that savvy on that, but that's kind of
I'd like to hear one other comment for you before I let you go, and that is the he mentioned about the mass shootings as well, and he's talking about, I'm sure he's talking about some form of gun control and hate, you know, that the Second Amendment again, but you know, these situations with the mass shootings, you know, and trying to be able to control those things, what do you think? Because he was talking about the fact that they would get guns. We can get guns so easily, basically. And I'm just kind of paraphrasing what he said. It sounds like another Second Amendment argument.
I'm sorry?
It sounds like another Second Amendment argument, I think, about who has access to the guns.
Yeah, probably. But I live in California, and I hear about all the loopholes and everything else. But I think California is pretty stringent on everything, the background checks and so forth and so on. I know there's people that would like to see more so. And personally, I mean, I own firearms. I have no problem whatsoever with a background check. I mean, if I show up dirty on the background check, I should have a firearm. But the thing is, in California, and a lot of people are unaware of the driver's licenses that were issued to illegals, do not have, or California neglected to put federal limitations right on the front of the driver's license. Illegal aliens have come in, got their licenses that don't have that federal limitation attached. It's not noticeable that they get pulled over by law enforcement or whatever. And that license will allow them, A, to register to vote, and B, to buy a firearm. And for an illegal alien to have a firearm is a felony.
Well, it doesn't surprise me about not having a federal restriction on there, only because of the fact that California does not appear to be cooperating with anything that involves the federal government. So, I mean, go ahead.
Tell me, answer me this. And this is where I'm maybe missing the boat. But from what I understand, the control of the border between, say, Mexico and the United States, the United States, Canada, or wherever. Is that not a federal, part of the federal government's main function?
Yep, it is.
So who is California to dictate that we're not going to honor that?
Well,
I mean, would that not be a violation of federal law?
Well, that's the rub, okay? Because quite frankly, it's within the federal government to do what they want to protect their borders. I fully agree with that. But again, that's what part of the controversy is, and anything that California does or doesn't do consistent with that. That's why it ends up in the court. But you know, understand, anything on the West Coast is going to go to the Ninth Court Circuit of Appeals, which is not a favorable appeals court toward the current administration. So, you know, then it has to end up going to the United States Supreme Court. And then when it gets there, well, you know, I'm sure you know that right now it's the Supreme Court. I don't want to say it's been stacked, but, you know, for people out there, I don't want all of that madness coming back at me. But, you know, right now you might say a lot of the issues might tend to favor the current administration, you know, at this point. So, hey, but listen, I do appreciate you having called in to give your point of view. So thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Might I make one more point?
Yeah, go ahead.
And you were talking about your awareness and so forth and so on in your environment. And I've heard that from you many, many times on your show. And I want to say that is the key element, because I'm watching people in my neighborhood at the grocery store all over in my daily travels, and they do not pay attention. They'll walk out in front of cars. And I'm just thinking, these people are totally unaware, and they're going to be victims one day if they're not careful. And in that, I took a class just recently, and it was defensive shooting. And they were saying, you know, always be aware of your environment. And I thought I was. I thought I was. And I looked, but I didn't see. And there's a big difference there. I mean, being aware, because he said, when you're done shooting, check all around you, make sure it is safe. And I did. I turned around. I saw him. I saw my entire environment. I thought, but I really didn't see. I went through the mechanics, but not really what I was supposed to be doing. And afterwards, the whole class said, well, you didn't see him standing there with a knife at your back. So it's, I can't stress enough to be cognizant of where you are, who's there, what's going around, police activity, homeless people, what have you. It's a nice thing to go home at the end of the day to your loved ones.
Absolutely.
And in this world today, it's vitally important, and I really thank you for pointing that out to everybody.
Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate you calling in. Have a nice evening, and thanks for listening.
All righty.
All right, bye.
Alrighty. All righty. Bye-bye.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, another point of view. I'm glad that, you know, I appreciate both callers calling in. Both callers gave their points of view on a very sensitive issue that's going on in this country. And, hey, my job is to get the message out there, and anytime people want to call in and give the points of view, I'm always happy to hear it. Getting back very quickly on the piece I want to conclude on, at least the first part of the surviving the threat. Look, to be a survivor, I want you to understand two things. You need to make yourself and your loved ones less desirable targets, and make yourself and your loved ones as less desirable as possible. You need to have a plan for survival. In fact, every member of your family needs to learn some basics, some basic urban survival skills, and have three separate survival action plans, one for school, one for work, and one for your leisure activities. Don't leave that out. Those are the three right there, work, school, and leisure. So remember that. And look, I'm not telling you to sit down at some drawing board and to go through all of this and, you know, you got your board and you're doing this. I'm just saying, you know, have some reasonable, plans in place. So that if something did happen, you have more chances of surviving that way. All right, because I'm going to tell you, you know, the harsh realities is that we're living in a different world, and we're going to just have to make our adjustments. It's like the caller now, you know, that was on just now just said, you got to make your adjustments. And as I told you, the more you go over these things in your minds, it almost becomes an automatic process at that point. It doesn't look like we're going to get to the myths today, so I'm going to come back to that, and I'm going to come back to the zebra murders as well. Because we had a couple of good callers, I'm not going to be able to get to those things. But I do want to still cover them, so I'll be looking to cover them next week. Now, look, a final note on this business from episode one that I want to stress. Keep in mind that situational awareness is listening to your gut. Let your instincts guide you. Your gut feelings may not always be right, but I'm going to tell you they're usually the first sign that something might be wrong, so pay attention to that. And I'll also tell you, never put your back towards the main point of any entry or exit at any bar or restaurant that you go to. Sitting near the rear, facing them, preferably, you know, by the fire exit, whatever you have to do when you're out and about with these enclosures, all right? So I'm talking about the restaurants. I'm talking about the theaters. If you're at a bar and grill, whatever the case may be, always sit where you're in proximity to an exit and at least still in view of that front door. I can't emphasize that enough. Knowing where all the exits are of any building that you enter, think about that. You enter into a building, always know where the exits are. All right? That's just simple. It doesn't take much to understand that as a concept. And I'm just telling you, that what may help you save your lives. I don't care whether you're at the mall. You've heard me say that before, you know, or a store. Just keep it in mind. It's there. You know, and the last point that I want to make to you is walk with your head up while you're scanning the area around you. Don't walk always looking at the ground. Some people walk because they're watching where they're walking. That part's okay. I don't want you tripping over something. But like he just, the last caller just mentioned about how he has observed people in parking lot situations or, you know, et cetera. They're not paying attention and they almost get run over. I'm telling you that you got to pay attention to that. This is what we're talking about with situational awareness of being able to survive a threat or any threat. That's what you have to be able to do. All right? Okay, look, I'm going to be letting you go now. And I want you, you know, to at least seriously consider the things that we talked about today. All right, you've been listening to Jim Potts at LA Talk Radio. It's time to close out the show. But let me remind you, once again, you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/JimPottsAuthor. Be sure to join me next week. And hey, do me a favor. If you like what you heard, spread the word for me. Our listeners now, are numbers are growing, and I'm very happy about that. But until next week, do me a favor. Be aware, be vigilant, and most of all, be safe. Talk to you next week. Bye.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.